Among the Bible's masterpieces, in and among such masterpieces as the 23rd Psalm, Mary's Magnificat, and the Beatitudes, in and among such masterpieces, there lurk a great many utterly inscrutable stories. And among these inscrutable stories, today's story might just take the cake. The story begins as a simple matter of notification, which turns into a negotiation, and oh my word, what a negotiation it is. And the negotiating partners, none other than Father Abraham and Yahweh, the Ancient of Days. So the story opens with God's ears cocked. God is listening to us. God is listening to humans. Think of a new parent who is forever listening for their baby's sounds, its breathing and gurgling, its cries and its laughter, or God forbid, the sound of too much silence. So does God listen to us. And God has at least one ear forever cocked earthward, humanward. The same God who will later hear the groaning of those Israelites who are suffering in bondage, in slavery in Egypt, that same God is listening now in this story. And what God hears that time, this time, what that which arises from the earth, that which arouses God's curiosity and God's concern, is a great hue and cry. An outcry arising from the people of the earth, an outcry against two entire cities, two cities that are just filled with sin, rotten to the core with sin. And where sin is present, this is the problem, where sin is present, pain is present. And because these two cities are so filled with sin, they are also poignantly filled with pain. And God will not, God cannot abide too much human pain. So God hears the people of the earth, their voices rise up, they're complaining about these two cities whose sins are, shall we say, unoriginal. They are crying out in anguish over excess consumption by the rich, coupled with indifference to the needy. I said unoriginal. First sin, excessive consumption by the rich, coupled with an indifference to the needy. And they cry out over another sin, pride, the kind of pride that cometh before the fall. Human pride, the kind of I am the master of my own universe pride. Or I am a self-made man pride. Or I am more evolved than others pride. And the third sin, the third sin against which they are crying out is the sin of the exploitation of the vulnerable by those who are powerful. These cities are guilty then of this particular trinity of unoriginal sins. So the conversation begins when God informs Abraham that there is this great hue and cry arising from the earth. The hue and cry against these cities is so grave, the pain caused by all that sinning so deep, that God cannot but act. When human sin grows so toxic, so virulent, so invasive and pervasive, so as to cause a metropolis of misery, a city's worth of suffering, God cannot but intervene. Now the convention, you have to understand the context of this time. The convention, the assumption shared throughout the ancient Near East at this time was this. If you're good, you will prosper. If you're evil, you will be punished. Quid pro quo, cause and effect. It was a closed and a shared theological system that understood retribution as the cause of bad behavior. The equation was simple and predictable. Bad behavior begets punishment. What's more, there was another shared assumption that when evil among humans grows so pervasive, so vile that it's basically infected everything, that the only remedy the only remedy is total annihilation. Remember the story of the flood. Total annihilation means that along with all those wicked, at least a few righteous will become unfortunate casualties, collateral damage, if you will, of an otherwise moral sentence of destruction. See, those are the shared assumptions in the ancient Near East at the time. Evil people will be punished, and overwhelming evil will require total annihilation, the good perishing with the bad, for the sake of something better, which is a fresh start, okay? That's where we start here. It's into this context, with these assumptions, that God informs Father Abraham of what is about to happen. The sin of these two cities is so great, the pain caused by human sin so deep, and so pervasive, that God has no choice. God is left with no choice but total annihilation. Both cities must perish for the sake of a fresh start. But what becomes a simple matter of notification, God notifying Abraham as a courtesy, turns into a most remarkable and unprecedented negotiation. In the fearsome presence of the divine, in the face of the Ancient of Days, the Mysterium Tremendum, the author of the universe, little old Abraham, puny human mortal Abraham, dares plant his 2 feet right before God and challenge this quid pro quo of divine retribution. Into this closed system of divine retribution, Abraham slides the slimmest of wedges in the form of a question and a new theological possibility. Abraham asks God, this God whose ears are cocked humanward, Abraham asks God to listen to the possibility of a new theological thought. Abraham asks, oh, Ancient of Days, is it possible that those who are innocent and righteous could, instead of them being ruined by, taken down by the wicked, is it possible to reverse this and that actually the innocent and the righteous could save the wicked? Is that possible? Is it possible, oh, Mysterium Tremendum, that grace might possibly extend even unto the guilty? Is it possible, Abraham asked, is it possible, O author of the universe, to imagine a new mathematics? That in this new mathematics, just one righteous is enough to save a city full of the wicked. Is it possible, O God, to consider replacing the old mathematics in which a majority of the wicked would cause the annihilation even of the righteous and turn it right round? Is it possible, O God, is it possible that not only am I, mere puny human Abraham, accountable to you, Ancient of Days, but is it possible, O Ancient of Days, that you too are accountable to me? With these extraordinary questions, Abraham slides in a wedge. He makes room for a new possibility, a brand new theological thought. A theological thought that has not happened in the prior pages that led up to this. Now, Old South Church and the United Church of Christ, we are so glad for our still speaking God. A God who has not abandoned us to the mists of sacred history. A God who is still speaking, still communicating new words for new days. But in this story, this ancient and astounding story, our inscrutable God isn't speaking so much as listening. God is listening to us. God is listening not only to the great among us, to the patriarchs and the matriarchs, the prophets and the apostles. God is also listening to and for our outcries, you and me, when we give voice to our shared pain, when we cry out that something is wrong and people are hurting. So that's one take on the story. that Abraham introduces to God a new theological possibility. But there's another take, another possibility. It goes like this. You know how sometimes if you're at a meeting, there's a really good leader, and that really good leader can lead you to believe that the great idea that came out of the meeting was your idea, and it really wasn't. It was really the brilliant ideas leader, but they had introduced it in such a cunning way that you ended up thinking you had thought it up. So the other take on this story is that it was God's idea to change the mathematics all along. And that by the time the meeting was over, Abraham thought he had thunk it up. In either case, you've got to like a religion in which puny humans and the Mysterium Tremendum, the Ancient of Days, confer together about good and evil, about life and death, about retribution and grace, about time and eternity. Thanks be to our father Abraham, and thanks be to God. Amen.